And I'd be all delighted to hear that the Irish boat people have landed safely in Vietnam.
That story you told, that the matter was insured, because the insurance is a wonderful thing, isn't it?
May I just say, Mr. Chairman, that it's a great honour for me to be here and realise, having listened to these other two idiots, that education is in fact a good thing and we should try and get more of it. What a pair of silly asses they are.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's not going to be a very pleasant show for Lord Charles. And even more unpleasant for Ray Allen.
All right, well, this program could turn out to be the woodchopper's ball.
Well, it's clear. We'll see how Lord Charles does in his battle for survival as we go to our first tall tale from True Life. It's about Worcestershire police who recently got special precautions when they set out to make a dawn swoop on the home of a drug suspect. Special precautions. It was feared that the man might be violent and that he had a dangerous accomplice. So officers were issued with handcuffs, firearms, and an unusual additional item.
A Doberman policewoman.
Well, I've got a better one than that. A Cam.LP. That would paralyze anybody.
What about a 10-foot pole and Nina Mouskow?
Well, there was a case the other day in Dublin where a fella robbed a bank and he cut the legs of the bed because he wanted to lie low.
My cousin, he's with the police, poor devil. They finally caught up with him. It's a shame, but I think the unusual item is a curved jacket. Because he was crouching at the time, the straight one wouldn't fit him.
I read in the radio, was it the TV? One of these times, anyway, magazines, that Coronation Street is going to feature a police raid in one of their future installments. They find some dope hidden under Deirdre's bed. It's Ken Barlow looking for his stuff.
Ray, do you have any thoughts on the explanation of this?
Well, I don't know, really, because if they went with handcuffs and firearms and an unusual additional item, I mean, that's like the mind boggles, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, it could be...
Little ferret.
What about a... Yes,
little ferret is...
Well, it could have been an old pop singer.
Yes, I remember a young policeman saying to me, I wish I was going home now and I'd love to rip the wife's knickers off.
That was an MP.
And I said, why... I said... Why would you do that? He says, they're killing me.
These days, they're very highly... The police these days, they're very, very into the 1990s.
They are.
You know that these days there are usually specially trained marksmen on the top of most tall buildings.
Mm-hmm.
They're called pigeons.
A friend of mine was an undercover policeman. Whenever they wanted him on duty, he was always under the covers. It was always embarrassing. They said to get him out of somebody's bed. And he was all... No, he was like that. He was great at disguises, though. He always used to go out and nobody could recognise him. He wore a ginger hat and a bowl of moustache. Nobody ever knew him.
I think the unusual additional item would have to be something in the form of a strip jacket, possibly.
No, I think it was a tranquilizer dart dipped in Horlicks.
Because I knew a fellow who used to drink Horlicks. And every time it was his time to buy a drink, he was fast asleep.
I dare you to name names while I have this stick in my hand.
Well, I don't think you're going to get this one, friends.
I don't think we are. Let's try again.
It's not a sniffer ferret.
No.
What is it? What's the special thing that they took with them, the police? Well, I'll have to tell you.
Go on, then.
The police were sent to the address of the suspect, and they were warned that he had a vicious Rottweiler dog.
Yeah, oh, boy.
Yeah. So they took 2 pounds of sausages. Yeah. That was it, to pacify
the beast.
Well,
that's funny, isn't that? That question came up the other day, Mr. Frost.
According to Police Magazine, the whole thing worked. When the old Bill burst into the bedroom, the suspect's wife, who was naked, woke up, grabbed the dog's collar and shouted, "Kill!" A policeman threw the string of sausages at the dog, but missed. And they draped themselves around the naked lady's neck. She hurled them back, screaming, quote, "Stop throwing sausages at me, you pervert!"
This is the first time I've seen David Frost dribble when he does this. He's loving every salacious moment.
Every moment, every valve.
I just like that reminds me of another old joke.
What, David
Frost? Of the fellow who broke into the butcher's shop and stole the sausages and ran up the Falls Road in Belfast. The policeman stopped him. He says, "Where are you going?" He says, "I'm going into the Catholic Church to hear Mass." And the policeman said, "I suppose you'll tell me those are your rosary beads hanging out of your pocket."
Great stuff. Right. Well, now we go on to tall tale number two. Henri Labiche, expected to do well on New Year's Eve. His small, expensive restaurant in Normandy was fully booked at special New Year prices. In the event all the diners turned up, gourmet food was presented to them, and the wine flowed like fountains. But alas, Henri now looks back on the evening as a disaster. You've heard what sort of an evening it was. Tell me, what went wrong?
Could I just check, Mr. Frost, for one moment? Do you speak French?
Possibly.
Yeah, well, I can speak it, of course, if it's written in English. But,
if you go into a restaurant and yeah. order, say, a la carte, cul-de-sac, yeah. you're liable to end up with 200 winter kitchen cobbles.
Yes, but I went with a wife to a Chinese restaurant, and she ordered the very top of the menu, and it turned out to be the manager.
A friend of mine won on one of these talent shows, a game show or something, and he won one of these weekends in Paris. He's a Cockney fellow, and he went out to this place in Paris, and he's with his wife in this restaurant. She was looking at the menu, getting very embarrassed. She said, "Yeah, Harry." "Oh," she said, "I can't read it. It's all in foreign." He said, "Leave it to me, darling. I was here during the war, wouldn't I? I speak the lingo." So he saw the fellow in the dinner suit. He said, "Here, garcon, Icky. He said, "Mon femme moi, avec dervish histoires, Freud. Freud, mark you." And with that, the fellow looked down. He said, "I'm terribly sorry. I'm afraid I don't speak French." He said, "Well, don't stand there like a twit. Go and fix someone who can."
What is that? What is
you, Mr. Frost? You're the sort of fellow who went to McDonald's and asked for the wine list.
I went into a Chinese takeaway one day, you know, and a fellow walked in behind me with a shotgun and said to the little Chinese fellow, "Give me all the money in the till," he said, "to take away."
I think the best waiters are married men because they're used to taking orders. They're the ones. Old Stinky Hargreaves went to a restaurant and he always went to restaurants. I said, "Why do you always go to restaurants?" He said, "I don't anymore. Now I'm married, I only go to nightclubs." I said, "Why is that?" He said, "By the time the wife gets ready, it's the only damn place that's open."
I took a lovely girl out for a very quiet, warm, intimate evening.
I loved it. One can.
But it was spoiled.
Like
what? People kept coming in to check their clothes and put money in the dryers.
What went wrong? We want to know what went wrong. Kendall has been a little bit close in something.
I thought that,
but
spin dryers.
Yeah. Henri's mistake came at the end of the celebrations when he was loaded with high denomination notes thrust on him by the happy diners. These were too much for his till, so with typical French peasant cunning, he hid them at the back of an unused oven.
Oh, no.
But with typical French peasant stupidity, his assistant chef cooked them with the next day's joint while Henri was sleeping late. So you see, you were half a point.
Yes.
Half a point to Kenneth there. Well,
this is another disaster, of course. I happen to a friend of mine who's now doing 8 years in jail for counterfeiting. And he counterfeited £20 notes. Unfortunately, they were £18 notes. And Emily went in to cash them. The fellow said, "Do you want 2 9s or 3 6s?
On that note, the sort of thing you would do. Somebody said to Frank Carson, "Would you like a Chinese?" He said, "No, I've got nowhere he could keep his bike."
And the fellow said, "Do you like Chinese?" He said, "Of course I do, but I couldn't eat a whole one."
Anyway, on that note, it's a good cue to go into our agony aunt section. This is where these wise men have the chance to put the lives straight of people all over this great nation. The first heart cry is indeed from this great world, from the Far East, by urgent airmail. Our correspondent writes as follows. "I have been working in Hong Kong for a year now, and last week my wife came out to join me for a month. Unfortunately, I failed to warn my Chinese valet of her arrival. And he woke her the first morning by slapping her on the bottom and saying, "All right, missus, time to go home." Since then, my wife has refused to speak to me, and I'm afraid the rest of her stay here could be disaster. Is there anything I can do to improve things? Lord Charles.
Now, I tell you what, he could tell her it's an old Chinese custom, because it's a damn sight better than the old English one of "not tonight, I've got a headache."
This obviously, this question has, if I may say it in front of Lord Charles, it's to do with SEX, isn't it?
Yes.
It is to do with
SEX. I'm afraid.
It is to do with SEX.
Yeah, I'm afraid that's right.
And a doctor once told my big Auntie Nellie that sex is better than a sleeping pill. And my little uncle, well, he's worried sick because he takes three a night.
Well, the great difference between the Hong Kong women and British women, in Hong Kong, the women walk behind you.
That's in case you collapse.
Yes. And this country, they walk all over you.
Sex should be as natural as riding a bike.
Yeah.
Although with sex, you don't need a rear light.
Well, you're born in the vulgar here now.
The size of you. What do you do?
A friend of mine, he was in Hong Kong, and he lived there for ages. I don't know why he did, but he did, and he was working out there. And his wife used to moan all the time, and he got fed up with it. He used to say, "One of these days, I'm really going to get rid of you, you know." And she said to him one day, she said, "Why don't you smother me with diamonds?" He said, "Because a pillow would be cheaper."
That's a lovely girl. That's a lovely girl as well. But
lovely girls in Hong Kong. The girls in Hong Kong,
yes,
they attend to your every whim.
Oh, boy.
If I'd have known that, I'd have taken more whims with me. And I've had a spur whim.
If I'd have known that, I'd have stopped her. The beautiful thing about Hong Kong is using the chopsticks.
Yes.
Oh, they're
filled with porridge, though.
Oh,
the question really said about this Chinese valet.
Right.
That's a marvelous thing.
The valet, yeah.
Slapping her on the bottom and saying, "All right, missy, time to go home." Now, this was a disaster for this fella because the wife's now going steady with the valet.
I think the BBC
actually is supposed to supply us with that, you know. We're supposed to have a butler on this show to put us in our tights with a warm spoon.
Right.
Otherwise, the producer's secretary, lovely girl, she dresses up as a French maid, and we do the best we can with a little bit of 3-in-1.
Don't we, June? I don't think you've given much advice to him.
Well, I think the best thing to do to improve things is just say to his wife, "Look, this fellow's probably had, he hasn't been with me a long time. He's probably been used to somebody else doing this. Take her out and buy her a Chinese meal."
Well, what he could do, he could tell
his, that idea.
He could tell his wife that the valet had made a mistake and he was really working for the man next door. And he accidentally entered the wrong flat. And then...
That's going to like that.
Well, then if he sees some pigs flying past the window, it means his wife's believed him.
I think the best thing you can do is get rid of the silly ass of the valet. Kick him out. Man's a fool. Mind you, you can't get staff these days. As you can see, I've got a yacht. Nobody to work on the damn thing.
Well, I think there's good advice.
You have to have a yacht or a boat in Hong Kong to deliver the junk mail.
Very good. Well, I think Ken Dodd there was the most helpful one. Let's go on to the second query, which comes from a listener in the Midlands. "Last Sunday, my wife and I visited one of those stately homes that are open to the public. We paid £4 a head to traipse around some dreary rooms full of old furniture then paid £1 each for a visit to the so-called zoo in the grounds. This featured a few mangy goats and chickens, plus some depressed-looking wallabies.
Right.
We ourselves have quite a nice old house in a large garden, and we reckon we could put on a better show than that. So we think we'll open our home to the public. Are there any snags to this, and what sort of thing would bring people in?" Ray.
Can I just make a suggestion here to this listener in the Midlands? Because I've got a stately home. I know it is in the state, too. You should see it. Good God. But for a start, madam or sir, I advise you for a start, if you can hear me, don't use live animals because they cost too much to feed. Sure. So my advice is don't get live, get stuffed.
Thank you.
Well,
Ken,
I think there is something in this. I think we've all been so many times around these old stately homes and looking at old furniture. And I know expensive it can be, because I actually opened a zoo in Ireland and we closed it in 2 days when the chicken died. Well, the keeper was crying. I said, "What's wrong?" He says, "The elephant has died." I said, "Then you've lost a friend." He said, "No, we've got to bury it."
A friend of mine had a little zoo, and he was very upset because he couldn't get a mongoose anywhere. And I thought I'd get him a pair of them. I thought I'd make it a nice little present for him. So then he suddenly realised how ridiculous the English language is, because I wrote off to these people and I put, "Here, sir, please send me 2 mongoose. And then I thought, "No, that's not right." So I put, "Please send me 2 mongooses. It still didn't arrive. So I went back to the beginning. I said, "Please send me a mongoose," and put, "P.S. make it 2.
You know, the Chester Zoo.
Yes, I knew Chester Zoo well. I'm just going to tell you.
Chester Zoo, this is a magnificent zoo in Chester. They trained a lion there to eat only when it hears the sound of a bell.
Yeah.
Yesterday, it had 3 steaks and an Avon lady.
Well, I was going to tell you about an elephant that escaped from the zoo in Ireland.
You're not.
And this lady rang up the police
and
said...
Not about the cabbage.
Yes.
Well, go for it, Frank.
Well, there was a prehistoric animal in our garden. It was eating cabbages with its tail.
Yes. And if I told you
where it was putting them, you wouldn't believe it. Oh, all right. But hold on. I must say this, Donny. Please do not interrupt me when I'm using new material.
Well, I'm sorry.
And I hate to say this, it's not the joke.
No, it isn't.
It's the way you tell them.
It's the way you tell them.
Well,
when you think,
all the different things,
sorry,
right.
When you think about it, there are a lot of people. We don't talk about stately homes.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, in fact, do open their homes to the public, if you think about it.
In Lord Charles's stately home, if I make familiar, that you have a home gardener there who drinks about the same as you. Incapability Brown.
Tell me, I must ask you one thing. May I just ask one thing? I've never known about this. In your stately home,
yes.
Have you got a cellar?
Yes, of course I have. What's in it? Dry rot.
No, I mean a bottle. You must have a bottle.
Oh, there is one. Yes. What's in that? A candle. What the hell are you asking these silly questions for? Listen to Ken Dodd, he's trying to say something.
Well, there's a stately home where they have a motor museum where you can wander around and view hundreds of stationary old cars. It's called the M25. And then a lot of people go to stately homes to see the beautiful paintings. Famous paintings attract people to these country places. Some people travel miles looking for a Picasso, end up going behind a hedge.
Well, the advice seems to be, don't use live animals, whatever happens,
well,
if you're opening your home
one thing
to the public.
One thing absolutely costs nothing, really, because you can grow it. A lot of state maize. If you grow a maize, one of those things with edges, thousands of young parents will come along desperately hoping to lose their kids in it.
Right. Now we'll go on to tool tale number 3. Mr. George Albright had just got out of his car in Palm Beach, Florida, when he was flattened by a billboard, uprooted by an abnormally high wind. The billboard, which advertised a film with Dolly Parton and Jane Fonda, was owned by an agency. But it stood in a public car park and was maintained by the local cinema. Whom did Mr. Albright sue for his injuries? Ray.
Well, anyone who had Dolly Parton and Jane Fonda on top of him should stop complaining, for a start. Well, that's ridiculous.
I think, you know, do you realise that a nudist is the only person who hasn't got to hold out their hand to see if it's raining?
Yeah,
what does that have to do with the question?
Dolly Parton's brilliant, isn't she? She's lovely. I love her. Apparently she went out jogging the other day and broke her nose.
As I said before, I represent the Vulture Star Insurance Company, and we've got Dolly Parton on our books. Double Indemnity. We've also got Rudolf Nureyev. When he gets his pension, he gets a lump sum. But I think this man probably got his head stuck. The billboard, because you know what billboards are like. They fascinate you.
They do, indeed.
Remember the one you saw, Drink Canada Dry?
Yep.
And you went over to do it? Well, this... Well, probably fell down, and this man got his head stuck between Dolly's cleavage
And he sued her because he thought he'd gone deaf. When Dolly Parton has a nightmare, does their whole life wobble before her?
This fellow needs a good barrister, and I know a barrister who's excellent. He really is. This fellow's so good, he once confused the jury to such an extent they gave the judge 9 months. He's one of these fellows. He said to his client one day, he said, "I'm sorry I couldn't do any more." His client said, "That's all right, 10 years is enough."
This billboard, it advertised a film with Dolly Parton and Jane Fonda. Yes. Who did Mr. Albright sue for his injuries? Well, obviously, he tried to sue Dolly Parton, but his lawyer couldn't stand close enough to serve the writ.
No, he didn't sue Dolly Parton. Who did he sue?
He must have sued... Surely it was the local cinema, wasn't it?
No, I would think he would sue the billboard company. Because they had failed. Now, when I studied law at Queen's University for 2 years, that the party of the first part on the third part was volatile to the part of the second part, which means that even bamboozled me. Now, I can't even remember what I said in the first part.
It's the films. Maybe the clue is in the film.
That's right. What was the name of the film?
My favourite film is the Wizard of Oz. Remember that famous scene where Toto, the little dog, tries to make the yellow brick road a little more yellower?
Well, my favourite film was, actually it's on release now next week, it's a good Irish film called The Return of the Man Who Never Came Back.
I went to see a Jane Fonda film once called Old Gringo. Turned out to be the Frank Carson story.
What do you think, Lord Charles?
Well, I think the audience realized that was just a nasty jibe from someone who was trying to prove he was funnier than me. And he has failed once again miserably. Frank Carson,
I will admit,
you get 10 sober.
I wish you wouldn't use that word in front of me.
This fellow, unfortunately, he fell down, he had an accident, he fell down a lift shaft. And he got a lawyer, and this lawyer got him some wonderful compensation. But when he went to the lawyer's office to collect the compensation, 3/4 of it had gone. He said, "Where's all the money?" He said, "There's only a quarter." The lawyer said, "Well, I had to deduct 3/4 of it. It's my expertise, my skill, and my legal knowledge in obtaining this." He said, but for me, the fellow said, you wouldn't have had the case. And the lawyer said, "Oh," he said, "any fool can fall down a lift shaft."
It reminds me of the lovely story of the doctor who said, "Everywhere I go, when I say I'm Dr. So-and-so, people ask me for advice." So this solicitor fellow says, "Well, just when you give me advice, send them a bill for £5 and you'll have no more problems." So he done that, and he met the solicitor about a month later. He said, "That was brilliant advice, you know." He says, "Every party I go to now, nobody actually bothers with me. I just stand there and get drunk and enjoy myself." So the solicitor sent him a bill for £60.
Well, let me tell you what really happened.
Yes, tell us, for God's sake.
Because you didn't get right. Whom did Mr. Albright sue for his injuries? Well,
Jeremy Beadle. Sounds like one of his stunts.
Mr. Albright's claim was turned down by his insurers because they said the accident was an act of God. So Mr. Albright decided to sue God. Well, he found a lawyer to file his suit, which named 32 churches, 3 synagogues, and 15 chapels as God's local agents. 2 churches hired lawyers to defend themselves. The case went to court, and Mr. Albright lost. So he tried to sue God.
Well, he tried to sue. Frank Carson tried the same thing when the box of fish fell on your head. And he said it was an act of cod.
Mr. Albright, he's
in the
silly afternoon. Never mind.
He's got a solicitor like mine. I had a solicitor, and I got 2 months in a motoring accident, and I was only a witness.
Well, at that point in the proceedings, we have run out of time, I'm afraid. The panel did not get any of our 3 tall tales tonight, but they gave us a lot of wonderful advice along the way. If you're wondering why there's a panda sitting on your roof, or why the pillar box is covered in strawberry jam, let us know and we'll try and work it out for you with the aid of our distinguished wise men. For now, this is David Frost thanking you for joining us on behalf of Ken Dodd, Frank Carson, Ray Allen, Lord Charles, Andrew Palmer and Nell Brennan, who devised and researched, and our producer, Edward Taylor. And we hope you'll join us again next time. It's time to pull the other one.